This is the DRF Players Podcast.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the June 12th edition of the DRF Players Podcast. I'm the host, Peter Thomas Fornital, filling in for Matt Bernier, who's off climbing mountains or finding winners or doing something exciting for the benefit of the world at large. I'm here along with DRF formulator Mike Hogan and our special guest filling in for Matt, Eric Wing. Eric, good to have you back on the program.
Great to be here, Peter.
Now, the last time you were here, you set the bar pretty high for yourself. We were talking about a turf sprint race at Keeneland, and you mentioned a filly named Katie's Eyes, who went and won at something like 13.5-1. I hope you bet her that day.
I bet her a little bit. I didn't bet her super strong, but I thought she was the value of that particular race, and I hope we can find one or two more like her during the course of our conversation today.
That makes a lot of sense, and that's certainly always the plan on here. I like to give out a couple of winners and see what we can do. We're going to get to tournament talk in a minute. I just want to talk quickly about some of the goings-on in the DRF Tournament Universe this weekend. But first, I just want to take the opportunity, Eric, to ask you, huge racing fan that you are, about your experience last Saturday and have you share with the listeners and the viewers what that experience was like for you and give a little bit of background about your relationship with the Triple Crown over the last couple of decades.
Well, you know, I was a kid when Seattle Slew and Affirm won. I was Secretariat was sort of before my racing time, but Seattle Slew and Affirm so long ago. And then I'd basically been to every Belmont since then, starting, you know, with Ali Sheba, working right on up. And the last several years, you know, working in the industry for a lot of these Triple Crown bids. In a nutshell, it was just very emotional for me. I was taken aback at how moved my kids and my young relatives were, almost to the point, like, where do they get off being so affected by this? They're too young to appreciate all the heart. And then I realized, while folks of our age or older than 40, let's say, know that the Triple Crown is very difficult to win, younger people think it's impossible to win.
Right.
The word my daughter used was unattainable. And so I think that's why it's moved younger people every bit as much as the veteran, older racing fan. Beyond that, I mean, just to have so many failures or close but no cigars and to finally see it happen. The other thing is it made me think, gee, you know, maybe this sport isn't as messed up after all. You know, maybe the breed hasn't been weakened the way people said. Maybe 3 races in 5 weeks isn't too much. Maybe we just needed a really special horse to come along, and due to larger foal crops in recent years, or, you know, these Triple Crown races suddenly attracting 20, 12, 15 horses. Maybe it was just a matter of having to wait for an American Pharaoh to come along. And that was kind of eerily gratifying to think that, yeah, you know, this sport is still as great as the three of us and so many others always believed.
That's great. Mike, picking up on that point you made about some of the younger people there and maybe, and that sort of almost proprietary feeling we have having been through so much. And then meanwhile, there's people there, including some of the folks I was sitting with, first day at the races. And Mike made the analogy the other day, it'd be as if a Red Sox fan came along in 2003.
Right, sure, yeah.
Have you had any further thoughts on the big day since we spoke last a couple days ago on here, Mike?
No, not really. I mean, I think it more just kind of solidifies that initial feeling I had, which is I don't really have much interest right now in trying to figure out his place in history. I'm just basking in the glow of now finally having a Triple Crown winner over 37 years since it's happened. You know, like Eric, like you said, almost seemingly unattainable. I mean, we had the owner of the last one to try it famously come out and say, "We're never going to have another one in my lifetime."
Not the only thing.
Right.
The only thing he said in that interview. But,
right. You know, and so the fact that we actually have one, it's great. You know, I mean, who knows what it means about where he's going to run next, or if I'm going to even bet against him or bet, it doesn't matter. I just am glad that we've got one. It's great. It's like, you know, it's like everybody is excited, and it's been a long time since there's been this kind of coalescing of, you know, the real racing fans and the people that work in the industry around this kind of excitement. I love it.
That idea of the shared experience is something that's really stayed with me and struck me as the week has gone on. This might sound crazy, but I really mean it. This win, this day at the races, this triple crown, I find personally meaningful to me among where I think looking back, I'm going to look at this as just a great day in my life. Mm-hmm. I think back to other days, you know, personal stuff aside, you know, obviously getting married, the birth of my daughter, those things in another league. But then I think about things like hitting a pick six, or even when I was on the horse ownership side, winning a race. Mm-hmm. Like, this is right there with those things, even though it wasn't anything that did anything for me monetarily at all. It was just, you know, when you hit a pick six, it's like, I hit the pick six, that's great, and you're going to tell your friends, and you tell too many people, you start to sound like kind of a jackass. But with this, it's like everybody hit the pick six, and we can all share in it together, and it's just beyond exciting, and I'm surprised even days later to still be feeling that glow like you guys were talking about. It's pretty great. Before we get to the PH races, I do want to talk a little bit about what we have going on in tournaments this weekend. Eric, did you notice the new format being debuted? It's actually an old format making its return to the DRF contest sites.
No, fill me in. Fill our viewers and listeners in.
I like it. We've got contests on BC Qualify on Saturday and NHC Qualify on Sunday, where folks can compete for both an NHC seat and a BCC seat, I said that wrong, BC seat at the same time, which is pretty exciting to be able in an online environment to compete for those two lofty prizes at once rather than having to pick and choose. We're the only place online where you can compete for the BCBC. So I thought it was an interesting move, and we'll see. Some folks have complained about it, of course. I'm not sure I want to play for that. I already have qualified for the BCBC, but you know, it's transferable. So to me, it's sort of a problem solved. I think it's cool. The market will tell us whether or not this is a direction we're going to keep going in. But as always, I like in the contest world, and you can maybe speak to this from your experiences being at so many NHCs, of the contest world showing a willingness to evolve with the times and change as things goes on, and not keep things exactly the same.
Yeah, and I know you've made this point many times, Peter, but I think the NHC, to its credit, has done a very good job of trying to sound out the players, trying to incorporate their ideas wherever possible. I know Keith Chamblin routinely does surveys and questionnaires after each event. And similarly with the qualifying schedule, I know the NTRA is every bit as concerned about what the players think and what their preferences are. And if this new kind of dual NHC-BC-BC thing doesn't work, so be it. We'd stop doing it.
It's good to try and see what players like and go from there. Some other interesting stuff in the contest world this weekend. For folks listening who are in the Midwest, and I know from Twitter that there are some of you out there, very cool opportunity to qualify at Prairie Meadows over this weekend, a two-day live bankroll event where you have to put up your own $500 live bank, but there's no further entry fee. And you can play, you have to play, there's a lot of minimums too, which is interesting. If you can find the article on my blog on drf.com, I give a full detailing of all the rules. But if you're able to get to Prairie Meadows for the 2 days this weekend, I highly recommend it. You don't get that many chances to play to win an NHC seat where you don't have to put up a lot of added money. And the one I can think of is the NTRA online contest. And in that, you've got 1,500, 2,000 people. Here, you'll obviously have a much more limited field to play from. When you worked with the NTRA, did you have any involvement, Eric, with those free contests or just something that was going on around you?
I would have involvement in terms of picking the mandatory races for some of them.
Oh, that's cool.
you know, you're selling it short, Peter, 1,500 or 2,000 people, more like 4,000 or 5,000 now, now that the membership ranks have swelled happily. But, you know, the good side of that is they're free and they're fun. The downside is, I've heard Judy Wagner and others say, is they're like playing the lottery.
Right.
You know, they feel that, you know, oh, you only had the first five longest price winners? No good. You needed that sixth bomb, too. But, you know, I've been friends with people who have won those things, and they're terrific. And the thing, whether it's a free contest like that or an NHC qualify contest or a contest from any other outfit, while we're factoring in our ROIs and, you know, what's the entry fee, what's the price, what's the purse, what's the prize, they are just fun to play.
Yeah.
Now, maybe not as much fun in a 10-race contest if you start out 0-for-8. But once you start, like, halfway decent in a contest, oh, my gosh. It's a great day's entertainment, even separate and apart from the wins or the losses.
Absolutely. Well, you have some personal experience to that, right?
Oh, well, yeah. You know, I played. I'm not.
You were
eligible.
The first day leader, right?
Oh, at the Horse Player World Series. Yeah, I was just talking about qualifying online.
But that's
the next
that
level.
That was a lot of fun too. Just, I mean, you're talking about one of your greatest days at being at the Belmont Stakes. My greatest handicapping day was at the. My handicapping experience was at the Horse Player World Series, you know, being in front on day one and then finishing seventh overall. But one of my next best days was just the time that I qualified online for it in like a $30 contest. So, I mean, that's how much fun for me these online contests
are. It is fun. There's something visceral about it. Seeing your name going up the leaderboard, competing against people you know or will soon be knowing. It's. I think that's a great point. I talk a lot about the value. Maybe I need to talk more about just how fun this stuff can be. And speaking of fun, the last thing I definitely want to plug are the two DRF qualify events this weekend. On Saturday, it's the final chance to qualify for the Gold Cup Betting Challenge at Santa Anita. They're going to be run June 27th and June 28th at Santa Anita. It's a $5,000 buy-in. If you don't want to deal with paying that, try to qualify online on Saturday for $100. It should be two really good days of racing. The end of this mammoth Santa Anita run, it's going to be the Gold Cup. There should be a bunch of other stakes races. And rumor has it, American Pharoah may be parading that weekend out at Santa Anita, which would add a little bit of incentive. I don't know what I'm going to do. I got to go. If he's not parading, I've got to see him in the flesh. I may try to scale a fence and get near the Baffert Barn. If I'm not shot on sight, it should be a cool experience.
Is he parading tomorrow in the Stephen Ford? He's training to be a Clydesdale?
Yes,
he is.
Budweiser have called. You know, unlike Burger King, they might not make the cut.
So if he parades at Santa Anita, then my personal request, and I don't know if it's easy
let's hear it.
I would love to have him parade with Lava Man as his saddle pony. I mean, can you imagine?
That's a lot of money out there.
Right?
Track. That's a lot of money won.
Yeah.
Whose barn is Lava Man in at?
I think he's still in the Doug O'Neill barn.
Yeah. He's a stable pony, isn't
he? He's a stable pony.
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
Well, that only makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool when you're out there and it's like, hey, that's Lava Man.
Right, Baffert would have to go and just, you know, say, hey, my stable ponies haven't won nearly as much as yours. Can I borrow Lava Man?
Yeah, but Smokey is not going to go for that.
Well, okay,
internet sensation true. Smokey the pony is not going to, even the great Lava Man can't put him aside. He'll be there. He's my buddy on Twitter.
He could have two. He could have two ponies, right?
Then how do you see the horse?
First triple.
All right, enough of this nonsense. Let's proceed. Let's get down to business. The Public Handicapper Challenge. Never too late to join this contest, folks. Just go to publichandicapper.com. There are weekly, monthly prizes, as well as the big prize, which is two free NHC seats. We talked about ways with no additional entry fee to compete. The Public Handicapper Challenge is great because it's a marathon and there's a lot of races. But I got to think over 6 months, skill is going to be the overriding factor. You can't just have a miracle day. You have to have a miracle 6 months. Have you ever played in Public Handicapper? I'm going to shame you if you haven't.
Start shaming me.
It's fantastic. You should join in. Even if you're not playing for prizes, I just think it's a fun endeavor to support Scott Carson, the founder, who's been a guest on this podcast many times, does a great job. And you should play. And anyone out there listening who doesn't play, you should play too.
One of the most interesting things about it, aside from being able to see everybody else's picks, and aside from just the showing your own ROI, which Pete, you made the point, if you haven't started, you can join now. You will be starting with a zero bankroll because you lose money if you pick a horse wrong. You're actually starting with a better bankroll than I am right now.
There you go.
So, which maybe doesn't say a whole lot about my recent picks, but that's one of the things is you are not, whereas other contests, if you start 3 months in or 6 weeks in, you might be more in the hole. Here, you're less so. If you just hit a couple long shots, you're right up there with the leaders.
It's conceivable that you could win even starting
Absolutely.
Now. I haven't looked
Absolutely.
At the leaderboard. I should have had it punched up here. I don't know how far ahead the leader is. There have
right.
been some prices,
right.
so it might be a long climb. But again, weekly and monthly prizes, and just that it's sort of a nice thing to do, not just to track your ROI in black and white right there, but they also offer you the opportunity to write your own analysis of picks. And I find that I just learned so much. I mean, even to come on the show today, you're not going to be able to see it from here, but you'll see I write like a novel. Nah, there's no light at all. I write like a novel on each horse just to be able to talk about it, because in the process of doing that, I feel like you learn so much more. So I think public handicapper and contests in general will just make you a better player. So there's my spiel.
Even aside from that, one of the things that I love about it is the odds. The odds board.
That's another fun thing that Matt points out often, too.
Yeah.
Within the universe of Public Handicapper, the site computes the odds. In other words, of just that pool of people playing, the however couple
How
thousand.
How many are on which
yeah.
horse?
Correct. Right. So you can get some idea of who the wise guy horse is.
Yep.
I mean, clearly, because it's a contest, people don't bet exactly the same way. But I think it really does point out either live long shots or long shots who might take a little more money than you think. There's a lot of great tools on that site, publichandicapper.com. We have four races this week. The first one is at Belmont Park, goes as the fifth race. It's the Poker, a grade three, run at 1 mile on the grass. Eric, as our guest, I'm going to ask you to start off with giving us a couple of thoughts on the Poker.
Well, thank you, Peter, and I always enjoy the Poker because I believe it's named after one of my favorite card games. Just kidding. Mr. Hogan has printed in the Saturday form some favorable formulator stats relevant to Il Campione, who I just do not like in this spot. Having reasons that have nothing to do with Mike, I cannot stand horses that were, and I might have mentioned this the last time, entered or considered for two different spots, and the trainer opts for the easier spot. This horse was targeted supposedly for the Manhattan. His PPs would indicate that the Manhattan distance would probably be more suited to him than this flat mile. Chad Brown in the Saturday form has some very tepid comments on this horse. At least I thought they were tepid. You know, if he fires his A race, he certainly could win this race. But we're looking for things farther down the road, like the Arlington Million. So at a 5-2 price or anything like it, I have no interest in Il Campione. Ironicus, I think, is okay. I know Mike Watchmaker likes him in the Weekend Warrior. However, the three horses I'm going to mention are my top pick would be All Included from the rail. If you look at Ironicus's form, All Included looks pretty much like the same horse prior to Ironicus winning the Dixie, except All Included is going to be twice the price, and he's getting a nice 4 pounds in his favor in the weights. How great as a 20-1 shot? Really, I don't see anything wrong with this horse. If I needed a price in this contest, very sharp speed figure, a proper turn back, I think he's good value. And then just Vijack, who on paper at 15-1 might look to some like a horse that they're just out of options and they're hoping is a turf horse. Well, there's reason to hope that this is a turf horse. He's a sibling to Teppan, who's probably the leader pro tem in the Philly Amer turf division, and just won on Belmont Stakes Day, you know, on the undercard. So it's 1-5-10, All Included. How Great and By Jack that are the interesting ones to me.
I like it. Yeah, Once Upon a Time, How Great would have been very logical in here if he can come up with a glory days run at age 6. And that's a good point also about the pedigree on By Jack. Also, Disco Rico, right? Isn't Disco Rico in that family?
The second, or no, the dam is half. The dam is unraced, but she's half to Disco Rico.
Where do you see yourself ending up in here, Mike?
Unfortunately, I feel like I'm going to put more weight on your top choice, number one, all included. I like him for a number of the reasons that you do, Eric. He's undefeated on the turf. He's going to be a bit of a price because even though he's 8-1 on the morning line, I think long on value is going to be shorter. I think the Il Campeón debuting for Chad Brown in North America will be shorter. I think Ironicus will be shorter. I think Heart to Heart, who you didn't even mention, who I think might even be the most likely winner, ran a huge race first off the bench in a race that he very well needed and could be controlling speed if he doesn't take too much early pace pressure from King Creasa.
King Creasa won't let that happen.
Well, yeah, but I think he's just a better horse.
I don't disagree with that.
So I think all four of those will take more money. You're right about Vijack. I wonder if he will probably float down a little from his 15-1 morning line. I think we'll get a good price on All Included. I have to also note Mike Vesci's Clocker Report has a very positive. It was the May 3rd work, which was before the last race for All Included, but he says better than Commissioner. Well, just urged a tad outside 37, 100, or 1 minute and 4/5 seconds. Very positive workout report on All Included. He had a couple maintenance works since then. I actually looked in Formulator because there's not a workout report on the Saturday work, but he worked the same time that day as Dame Dorothy and Divine Oath. Couple real racehorses in Todd Pletcher's barn. I think there's one. He's a lightly raced 4-year-old making his second start as a 4-year-old. You know, sky's the limit here, and you're going to get a good price.
Now, I'm not going to add any weight to All Included's back. In fact, I'm going to break out the cold water.
I love it.
The cold water just comes from the tape. I just thought, well, two things. One, I mean, the horse was supposed to win that race.
Yeah.
Got a perfect trip in that race.
Yeah.
And was just being very goofy coming home.
Yeah.
Getting out, looking a little green. For some trainers, you might say, oh, well, you know, slow to mature, needed the race. You might use those kind of things. From Todd Pletcher, who debuts his maidens more professional than his 2-year-old maidens more professional than the average 4-year-old, I'm not sure I buy that as an excuse. I'm worried if he doesn't have a character flaw and is going to have a little bit of trouble stepping up here.
The funny thing is, Peter, looking at the Mike Vesey workout report, you said that he worked great two back, better than Commissioner. His most recent work said he worked in blinkers, which would be a little odd given the fact the horse won his last three without blinkers.
Yep.
So that speaks to the Pletcher himself apparently is experimenting.
Yep.
He spotted what you
That's
spotted.
True.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
a good point.
So it's but I mean, of course, if the price is big enough,
I
say cold water
sure.
more as a
no,
gag.
No.
It's not like I consider the horse for me, a peripheral contender.
Well, you mentioned him being goofy down the lane. Speaking of goofy down the lane, did you happen to watch the last race for Il Campeone?
Oh, no, I didn't know we had tape on Il Campeone.
Well, YouTube.
Nice, good
YouTube.
Man.
YouTube. Yeah, go to YouTube, watch the El Derby.
It's just the El Derby?
El Derby.
I love the name.
El Derby.
Yeah,
thank
El
you.
El Derby. Of course, 1 by 9.25, much the best, but you want the definition of goofy down the lane.
All over the place?
Oh, my God. The horse was, I thought the horse might go over the rail.
Really?
He was running sideways. He wouldn't change leads. Who knows what he was beating down there, but boy.
Guys, you'd certainly not know that from the comments we get on Il Campeone. Gee, tell me if you wouldn't own any of this. First by 9 lengths. Comment, much the best.
Yep. Well, but he was also much the best when he was first by 2 and 3/4. So.
Back on June 20th, when he came in second in the Alberto Villal Infante, second best.
Well, yeah, that's a salient point. But of course, it mentions the one where he did finish lost rider at the start. So hey, there's some useful information.
That was downright illuminating compared to these others.
There are a couple long shots I do want to mention.
Please,
here. There's one that I think is really intriguing at a price, and I think will be a huge price, and that's number 8 Paris Vegas, for Elizabeth Voss. daughter, of course, of the late Tom Voss.
Tommy Voss, yeah.
This is a horse, you know, eight-year-old gelding. His best days may be behind him, but, you know, he's a consistent horse that can run big races now and then. If Il Campione's not ready to fire, if Vijack doesn't take to the turf, if there's a speed duel and heart-to-heart is burned, he is one that would benefit from a fast early pace, and he could hit the board at a big price. The other one I'll mention is more just from an interest standpoint. It's very strange to see, in spite of it all here, for trainer Eugene Reef. I actually looked. Formulator doesn't go back this far, so I looked in DRF internal. Career, Eugene Reef lifetime as a trainer. Do you know how many starters he's had in stakes races? Not even graded stakes, but stakes races.
I can't name too many.
That's, I don't know, zero?
Two.
Two.
Two. Two. So this horse coming off of a fifth place finish at 73-1 in an allowance race, now stepping up into a grade three, I'm going to guess 150-1?
It's going to be over 99.
Yeah.
My three, I told you I wrote a novel about some of these horses. My three words on number nine, in spite of it all, does not belong.
Yeah.
But we haven't talked enough in this race about my top pick and my old pal, number two, Long On Value. I just want to go over, I mean, you know, it's not like you have to get that creative to make a case, but I did think it was important to point out that he does have legitimate excuses for the last two races. I felt like in the Dixie, that was just a very difficult post and a very wide journey. And two back, I just thought he lit out too fast.
Yeah.
I think this is a horse who's better coming from off. I think we discussed already the possibility of King Creesa and Heart to Heart hook up on the front end. I think things could set up very nice with an inside trip for Long On Value. I just believe he's the best horse in the race, and I haven't given up on the idea of him possibly continuing to step up and look like a grade one horse for Billy Mott at some point this year. I don't know. I have no idea how they're going to bet this race.
Right.
There's a bunch of horses who the gut says, oh, they could be bet down, just like Mike was saying. But so when that's the case, you just don't know what the crowd's going to do. But for multis, for me, I'm very happy hanging my hat with Long On Value.
Well, I have to say, Long On Value is a little ironically named, considering I think in the Dixie he was 10-1, 8-1, went off as your 5-2 favorite. And if you'll know, I'm sure you noticed, looking in his PPs, whenever he is, aside from, and of course I'm just looking at the paper here, so the earliest one on the paper is the May 3rd race from Churchill last year, where he was 17-1 in the American Turf. But aside from that, every time he's been less than 10-1,
He's been 10-1 or right, more, he's won.
Right. So
I don't know. I don't think that's
lately,
ironic. I think that's true to his name.
I guess, but the point being here is he's not going to be Long On Value tomorrow.
Yeah.
And when he's bet, he tends to be a little less than impressive.
Hey, it's you know, that's a coincidence in my opinion. And as long as you could get, 5-2 or higher, I'd be happy hanging my hat here.
Fair
enough. All right, let's move on. I think we gave some folks some good ideas there. The next race we're going to talk about is a race I can't quite say I've done the 100% job on. I'm probably up to about 85%. It's the ninth race at Woodbine. It's the Trillium, 100K stake. It's going a mile and a 16th on the synthetic. Mike, why don't you lead off with your thoughts on this?
Yeah, so this is an interesting race. And again, I think it goes back to, from a value standpoint, who's going to take money. And you've got a number of horses that are going to be the likely favorites coming off what I might consider maybe not their top effort. And I think I've said it on the podcast. I certainly have said it to you and both of you guys. I don't like to take horses at a short price coming off of a weak effort. In fact, I like to look for a long shot that is coming off of a horrible effort, and I can maybe justify that effort, excuse that effort, and figure, because people are seeing the horse is going to be way undervalued, overpriced, whatever you want to say, and that's where I landed on in this race, which is number 7, Stellaris. You've got a horse coming off of a ninth beaten 56 and a half lengths, not 56, 56 and a half lengths, earning a buyer of zero, okay? But the trainer is not a ridiculous, no hoper like we mentioned in the last race, who never puts his horses in stakes races and never
Mike
has a
Stidham's chance. Is one of the sharpest guys around.
Mike Stidham's a 25% trainer. Off of a bad effort, he moves the horse not down in class but up in class. Yep. Okay. I like that.
Two nice works on the synthetic since.
Two fantastic works since tells me that the horse is no worse for wear. I got to think, for whatever reason, did not like Churchill's turf, that turf course that day. Gets back to the synth where she's 3 for 3 in the exacta, and you're telling me I might get 12-1 or higher? I like it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. Another important note is just the success she's had routing on synth before,
right?
If you go back to July of last year.
Doesn't this seem like a case where Stidham, who is a very sharp trainer, I mean, regardless of what type of race he's running in, just wanted to get this filly back on synthetic at all costs?
Sure.
And there were very few options. I mean, Press
Arlington,
Kyle Downs.
Yeah.
Arlington.
She'd been training at Arlington. So
I had one issue with Stellaris, and the reason I did not land on top, though I think I will use in my top three picks on Public Handicapper, but I was just not so sure how the pace is going to play out here. There's a lot of closers in this race, and Stellaris might be the closiest closer of them all, which I don't love, though. Isn't a prison sentence on synth? But I just wanted to throw that out there and generally get your guys' thoughts on the pace in this race.
I mean, it's a good point, but if you look back to the last win, which of course was the second to last time she showed up on the synth. You know, the last time she was on the synth, sure, she was 9 out of it early. But the last win, when she won that optional, the optional claimer last May at Arlington, she was, you know, only a half length out of it early. She was 2 lengths out at the second call. She doesn't need to be rallying from way out of the clouds. I think she has, certainly last race didn't really show a lot of early foot, but prior to that, you know, it could be 4 or 5 out. I don't think she has to be 10, 15 out in order to have her best stride. But you're right. It kind of comes back to, is anybody going to go with the stretch out sprinters, the fastest of which appears to be number 4, but at a short price, I'm thinking that these stretch-out horses are not going to be running at the end.
There's an awful lot of them in here. Eric, where did you end up in the Trillium?
Well, first of all, I'll just be interested to see. She's not my top pick, but that stretch speed horse you're talking about, Mike, number 4 unspurned. 5-2 on the morning line. I'm going to guess she goes off more than 5-2.
Really?
I just have that feeling, though, playing against that is the fact she might be lone speed, but you know, coming off what looks like a rather blah 80, and pretty obvious, you know, having lost ground in that race, I think that might throw some off the scent. Although, if you go down to the Bison City, you'll see she can win wire to wire at this distance. I'm not saying she's the bet. I just think she might be a little more than 5-2.
Right.
The horse I don't like is Checkered Past. This is what I would refer to as a trying to recapture the glory horse.
Won this race last year.
Exactly. Yeah. And look how she came into the race last year, Peter. Win, second, win, boom. She was sharp. She was in form. Now she's like coming off 2 crummy races, a 9th and a 6th. And like, oh, shoot, what do we do now? I know. Let's run in the Trillium. We won that race last year.
Yeah.
And for all that, you're going to get 3-1. The horse that interests me is the one on the outside. I'm a Kitty Hawk. This horse may be a cut below in terms of the resume or past accomplishments, but the trainer has certainly been hot, albeit in a small sample, 2 for 4 with a second mixed in. The thing I notice, won her last race going 6 furlongs, which I don't think is her best distance. In the past, when this horse has been good, she's tended to stay good for a little bit. You see 2 separate instances where she won back-to-back. Now, one of those, she was DQ'd for some reason from purse money. Maybe there was a medication overage. But she's kind of a feast or famine type filly for much of her career, and she's kind of on a feast trend right now. If she can kind of run back that last race for what seems to be a hot trainer, I think she's as good as many in here at 12-1.
Yeah, I think at 12-1, I would definitely consider using. I was a little worried she had that last time was the time look. But if this morning line were to be accurate, I think you can make a case that there might be some value there. Just want to talk a little more about Unspurned, the number four. 5-2 would actually be A-okay with me for a price on her. I do think she's the most likely winner. It was a very strange trip last time where Alan Garcia sent from the gate and then grabbed, and then meanwhile, like, the next thing you know, Skylander Girl was just gone. It was just, it was an odd trip. It just wasn't a typical, it certainly wasn't her best race. And I don't know what tactics are going to be here, because I agree, one of you guys mentioned she could project to be loose on the lead. She's won on the lead before, but I don't know what happened that last time. Maybe off the stretch out, they'll just send, and he'll have plenty of horse left, and she'll be okay. I also just like that Atfield, just such a great trainer, and old school, and the kind of guy who, you see a lot of these modern trainers, I don't think that the third race off the form cycle angle is necessarily a positive anymore. Mm. They tend to, a lot of trainers these days, you get the best out of them right off the bench or in the first couple races. Guy like Atfield wouldn't surprise me at all to see this one rounding into form a little bit. Also, off that pedigree, I think the stretch out should be within reach. It's just a question of what the trip and the price are going to be, but I haven't decided who I'm going to put on top here, but she's certainly one of the ones who's in the mix for me in the Trillium. You guys have any other thoughts on any other interesting long shots possibly in here, or any reason we can attack some of these favorites?
Well, you know, you guys both did note the front running win in the Bison City for Unspurned. It's worth mentioning that she was competing against four other horses in that field. You know, that's the last time she's won on the front end.
It's the only time she's made the lead.
Right.
Except for one other grass race.
I think this is a race where she might make the lead just because there's not really many other...
Yeah, I don't know who the other options are.
Right. So, I don't know. She could win. She may very well be the most likely winner, but at a short price, she's one I want to take a stab against. And the one I almost landed on was number five, Uchenna.
The other Atfield,
who... you know, certainly Alan Garcia might have had options and looks to have chosen Unspurned,
no doubt there.
She's one where, even though she won her last out on the turf, Synth doesn't seem to be an issue. She won over in Great Britain on the Synth, and just the way I watched that race, the way she ran, it seemed more like she didn't have a turn of foot. It was more of a grinding win that I think would translate just fine to the Synth. My only concern from her is I think she's going to get bet down. I think she could be, especially if you're trying to poke holes in some of these shorter price horses coming off of weaker efforts. She's one that seems to be improving and still could improve and take a step forward here in her, you know, third start in the form cycle, going back to the old Atfield angle there as well.
So the other one for me might be, and again, the pace gives me a little bit of pause, but number six, Sweater Weather, is appealing to me. I feel like the last is very easily excused, sprinting behind a lone front runner, and the three races prior for her show that she fits, good-looking work tab. And going back to that point, if some of these stretch-out sprinters who are maybe more sprinters don't take to this. This is one who I think really wants to be doing what she's doing today. Again, the pace here makes it hard to want to spend too much money.
And if you are thinking Unspurned is the most likely winner here, go two back. The last time this Sweater Weather went two turns,
she's got her
easily handled.
Yeah, she's got
Unspurned.
Her on the form book.
Right,
yeah.
And you're gonna get what, three times the price?
Yeah, no. So if it was more confident about the pace, Sweater Weather would be a confident pick. Any other further thoughts here, Eric, before we move it along to the fleur-de-lis?
No, I'm sticking with I'm a Kitty Hawk. And
I like
you're
it.
A kid. Wasn't that Foghorn Leghorn?
That's it.
No, I mean,
Mapperdier would blanch at that reference, by the way. Anytime we go pop culture, if it's not pop culture from the last like 7 or 8 years, he starts shaking his head. It'll be fun with the video to see how upset he gets when we start talking about, you know, 1960s comic books.
I almost do it just to get a rise.
I agree with what you said. It's not a race to really bust open the bankroll and bet a whole lot of money for all the because of all the uncertainties. But I may actually play this race and play I'm a Kitty Hawk.
Yeah, we've
it's
got
a fun
some
little one.
We've got some interesting price ideas here. Definitely gonna mess around. So night racing at Churchill Downs. It's the Stephen Foster card. We'll be talking about the Stephen Foster very shortly. But first, let's talk about the seventh race, the Fleur de Lis. Eric, I'm going to go back to you to start us off for this mile and an eighth test on the dirt at Churchill Downs.
Yeah, I found this an interesting race. Interesting in part, a lot of these horses come out of the Grade One La Troyenne. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, one that did not come out is the La Troyenne winner, Molly Morgan, who's a Churchill horse for course and would have run in this race. However, she suffered a career-ending injury during a workout after the La Troyenne. There's nobody I really like very much in this race. I wanted to like Tiz Windy, but really,
we can talk about Tiz Windy. That was she was going to be my top pick.
Gold Medal Dancer to me is A, the most likely winner, and B, was the most compromised by the pace in the La Troyenne, which was really hot. I mean, Sweet Whiskey was gunning almost rankly so on the lead in the La Troyenne, really set it up for Molly Morgan, who was next to last in that race. Gold Medal Dancer was stalking that pace and then was forced to almost move a little sooner than he wanted to because My Miss Sophia kind of sort of middle moved during that race. And I thought Gold Medal Dancer had every right to get swallowed up in the lane and really hung in gamely for second. Donny K. Van Hemel, very good trainer. I hate to go chalky and pick the second choice, but I just,
Third choice.
Right, I feel less guilty now. You know, Sheer Drama, I didn't think ran as well as Gold Medal Dancer in the last race, even though Sheer Drama, you know, was about a nose in front at the wire. Frivolous. The only other horse I'm going to mention is Frivolous, who is just did not show up last time in the La Troyenne. If you go back to the mile and an eighth races, they're all good, and she won the Fall City with a 93 buyer at a mile and an eighth over this course last year. She's sitting there at 20-1. If you need a bomb for contest purposes, I'd be looking at Frivolous. But, you know, Yahil was, well, she's a long shot anyway. But
speed, pace speed, factor.
She's speed and a pace factor. There's just nothing that gets me too excited in this race, and I'd just rather go with the what I consider to be the more reliable Gold Medal Dancer.
We'll have to go back and forth with our picks because we each have knocks on the other's top pick. Mine on Gold Medal Dancer is just from a pace point of view. She looks to me like she needs the lead, and with Yahilwa and My Sweet Addiction in there, I don't know that she's going to get it. Or do you think she's fast enough she'll just clear, or do you think she'll show a new gear and settle and be able to finish effectively?
I just don't think Gold Medal Dancer needs the lead. I don't think she needs to clear or anything like that. I mean, she's won from off the pace going two turns at Canterbury and at Churchill going shorter. And I thought she did, like I said, I thought she ran a very good, respectable race, kind of into the teeth of the pace dynamics last time, and there's no horse getting the lead from Sweet Whiskey last time. So, you know, I suppose if she had an unchallenged lead, that would be good for her. I don't expect her to get that with Yahilwa and My Sweet Addiction, who, you know, does nothing for me coming off that four-horse wire job at Santa Anita against a subpar Warren's Vanita. Anyway,
she had it all her own way.
You know what? I wouldn't want my life to depend on the outcome of this race, but I think Gold Medal Dancer can stalk.
You make some good points. I mean, I was thinking she looked that it wasn't really settled last time so much as dead set on the lead. But if you go back in those PPs, there are examples where she has settled before, and that was an exceptionally hot pace last time. So it makes a little bit of sense. Now, I'm going to talk about why I like Tiz Windy, and then you can tell me why I'm wrong. I have her as an A, the logic being Carl Nafsker's charges very often do round up into form, should get a good setup here to me with, I think, the plenty of speed signed on. I know half the field is in different races, which obviously I don't love, but I'm just thinking she could be a long enough price to compensate for that, and I'm just hoping that she could end up being the best closer in the race.
I can't disagree with any of that, and I think she's a viable candidate. She likes Churchill well enough. Nafsker, you know, will have her well prepared. My only knock, and she's getting 4 pounds off, which actually, I'm kind of a dinosaur in that respect, but I like that.
I don't mind it.
If I get, you know, I don't care about a pound or two, but if we're talking 4 pounds going a mile and an eighth, that catches my eye a little bit. I just thought that, again, you know, she was out, despite the rail post, she was outside, which is basically where you wanted to be that day at Churchill. She had a favorable pace.
Yeah, it was bad all day. That's true.
Even though Molly Morgan was the only horse all day won on the rail, which was kind of
interesting. Well, it was a fantastic ride by Corey Lannery. I mean, not just that she rallied up the rail, but he cut the corner and probably gained 3 lengths by just cutting the corner.
Saved all the ground. Yeah. Tis Windy, I just thought, had the pace in her favor. You know, she had the kind of trip you would have wanted in advance, knowing what the pace was going to be, and she couldn't beat either Sheer Drama or Gold Medal Dancer. Having said that, she's 8-1, so I don't think that's an 8-1 that might go up.
I think you're right. I don't think
she's impossible at all. No. The only reason why it won't go up, guys, Nafsker tends to get respect at Churchill.
Well, that's true, and as well he should.
As well he should.
Many wins over the years.
I wouldn't be surprised to see her about the same odds as she was in the La Trienne.
So, Mike, what do you think about the Fleur-de-Lis?
Well, it's interesting. You threw cold water on each other's picks. I'm going to throw cold water on both your picks because for me the question becomes, what do you think of the La Trienne? Do you think the winner's coming out of that race or do you not? And I frankly don't. I don't really know if I want any of the horses from that race.
You're sort of limiting your possibilities.
Yes,
here.
You are. You absolutely are. Because it was a grade one on paper. I'm not sure that was a grade one field. And I landed on a horse that I don't expect to be 15-1. That's number 4, Yahilwa. She lost to, I think, the horse that would be the clear, overwhelming favorite in this race, Stop Maria, if she were in it tomorrow. She ran a very good race, doing a lot of the, you know, doing her own work on the front end. I don't know if she needs the lead. She certainly won 2 back in the at Hawthorne, Grade 3, where she sat a little and then passed horses after a bad break. She did the same thing down at Delta late last year. She's a horse that I think can take the lead if she's given it. I don't think she's going to get it. I don't think it really will hurt her if she sits maybe 2nd or 3rd behind My Sweet Addiction and Gold Medal Dancer. You know, and I think you're going to get a fair price on a horse that has done little wrong and from a figure standpoint I think fits with some of the favorites in this race.
Talking about how racetracks were playing, that was my only knock on Yahilwa, was I thought that was a good day for Inside Speed at Pimlico. I don't know if you kept a note on that, Eric. But
That was Black Eyed Susan Day.
It was, yeah. Yes.
And so I was just thinking maybe that was a little bit flattered. But there's no doubt if you go far back enough in the PPs, there's some races to make her competitive. And at the price she's going to be, I certainly wouldn't. I wouldn't want to book the bet on her.
Well, sure.
You know what, Peter? I'm with you. I wouldn't want – I don't favor her. I think, you know, Gold Medal Dancer, having run competitively against Untappable despite trouble, could, you know, much the same could be said about her, albeit at a shorter price. The one thing will note about Yahilwa is this horse has been racking up the frequent flyer miles.
Sure.
I mean, Santa Anita, over to Churchill, for the Hawthorne race, and we'll stick around for the Pimlico race. Now let's go back to California. Oh,
well, you know why?
That was a good work. Oh, let's go back and run at Churchill again.
You know why?
I don't know why.
James Cassidy doesn't want to run into Warren's Veneta or Beholder, you know, and so this is a
why didn't he just leave her at Churchill, though?
At Churchill? She didn't run at Churchill before.
No, but she was based there and worked at Churchill.
Oh, I gotcha. Yeah.
Instead of all this, maybe the horse thrives on the travel. But I just wonder.
That'd be the first time I ever heard that. The next time I hear that positive about a horse,
will be the first time. What the hell is this horse going back and forth like this? You know,
let's move on to the main event, folks. It's race 8 at Churchill Downs, going to be happening 9:42 Eastern Time. One of Matt Bernier's favorite horses is in here. Wish he were here to talk about that.
Yeah, I don't think he's on him though.
This is the Stephen Foster. It's a Grade 1. We're going a mile and an eighth under the lights, under the twin spires. Mike, why don't you give us your thoughts here?
Boy, it's only a 7-horse field, but there's some good ones here, you know, and I think it'll be interesting to see where the money falls, because I think you're going to have 3 that are relatively short in terms of the price, And at least in terms of public handicapper, I don't want any part of any three of them. They all could win. Lee may very well be your most likely winner, but off that travel at a short price, you know, that's the type of horse I like to bet against if I can. Commissioner, you know, I'm not sure. I believe he is a 109 buyer horse. Maybe 102 is what he got in the Pimlico special is kind of right up his alley. That may be good enough to win here, but it probably isn't. And, you know, Hopportunity really won this, or not won this race, but won the last year. He seems to like Churchill, certainly. He's one that seems like a logical winner, but I don't want any part of 5-2 because, you know, I'm not sure. I don't know. So there's one of two horses that I'm probably going to go with in public handicapper, and I can make a strong case for each. One is the improving Noble Bird. Ran best race of his life last out, just missing to Britannico. But I actually think I'm going to go with number three, Paganol, who's also a relatively lightly raced improving horse who ran a fantastic front-running win on Derby Day on the undercard. That was a really, really impressive effort. Set really strong early fractions during the running of the race. I thought for sure this horse was going to back up, and he didn't. He just improved his position late. He could be, I don't think he'll be loose, but he could be the fastest early.
He won't be loose with Commissioner down there.
Well, but I don't know if Commissioner's going to gun it.
From the rail?
Maybe, but I don't know. I think Commissioner sits second, maybe lets this one clear.
If he sprints out there, I think you're right. But then he'll have gone too fast.
We'll see. We'll see. You know, I mean, he's lightly raced, and I actually looked at the siblings. Do you know who his younger sister is?
I did not look at the pedigree on this one.
Granted, she's done her work on turf, but she's a good one. Miss Temple City, who's going to be running at Ascot next week. So the pedigree is there. You know, Chris Hartman's a good trainer. They wouldn't take a shot at this if they didn't think he had a chance to run big. He's going to be a huge price. He's going to be the longest shot on the board.
Yeah. I mean, for that reason, I can't fault it. But with both Noble Bird and Paganol, I'd be surprised if we didn't see a little regression to the mean, or dare I say it, bounce possibly to the moon in either case off what were both non-representative huge efforts. Of course, horses put big races back to back, so it's not
crazy.
But
there are only four, you know. Sometimes it's improvement,
right?
You know?
Right.
Sometimes, and that's why you're getting the price.
Sometimes it represents a new level of improvement. We shall see regarding those. For contest purposes, first I'm going to talk about the horse I think is going to win the race, who I might just go ahead and stick on top of public handicapper, because I'm not playing for a prize in public handicapper, so I don't play it exactly like I would if I were. Sometimes I like to pick winners I think would be worth betting or centering multi-race bets around, keep that strike rate up that won't hurt the ROI. I'm not just going to pick favorites to have winners. But with a horse like Lee, I think a lot of people are going to think exactly what Mike said about the ship, and they're going to be terrified. Ooh, the ship. Fact of the matter is, it's been a while. He's got, to my mind, one of the greatest trainers in the world in Bilmont. Didn't run badly, really, in Dubai, all things considered. It wasn't what his legions of fans were hoping for. Mm-hmm. He picked up an awfully big check and didn't, to me, run all that badly. Mm-hmm. And I just think setup-wise, I do think Paganol will fire. I think I do see him and Commissioner getting hooked up. And I sort of, the trip that you were describing as a possibility for Paganol, I see Lee getting in the pocket with those two knocking heads up front. I'm hoping he's got plenty left. But if he's not, you want to interject about Lee?
I just, Paganol, at least fraction-wise and Moss Pace figure-wise, is faster early.
Than Commissioner? I just think it's a function of, you know, race dynamics and the post position. Mm-hmm. I think it's very hard to break from the rail and then settle. Who do you think gets the lead here? You can easily
clear from the three path, though.
If you sprint.
I think Paganol is absolutely getting the lead. And I also think he has the little edge in that, in addition to getting carrying eight pounds fewer, you know, that 22-4, 46-1, I'm sure translated into some monster Moss Pace figures. I think that horse will have the added benefit on the lead of being one that the other riders dismiss. Like, oh,
that's true.
I don't have to worry about the
he's
three.
He's a 40 ones out there. Yeah, he will be 30 or 40.
Coming out of a so then.
Right.
You know, I'm not even going to waste my time or my horse's energy chasing that. It's what I call the wild sin phenomenon, when wild sin won the bluegrass under just such a scenario.
Yep. Take but, charge,
I
Brandy.
Mean, I like it. I like what you're saying.
So, I mean, I don't know if you're asking me for my picks. I love the analysis that Mike gave this race. I think the race goes through Lee. I also side more with those who think this horse is going to win about 3-5, despite the ship. He's the most talented. History tells you to be a little bit skeptical of these horses coming back from Dubai. But if he runs a 110, he's going to win. Where Commissioner is concerned, Paige McKenney and Senor Kiskayano just don't cut it for me in terms of, you know, horses you need to beat to prove you're a grade one horse. Opportunity, I am going
to talk about him.
I am going to point out that the plan was not to run third in the San Antonio and then sit out until the Stephen Foster.
Right.
The plan was always that this was a horse who a mile and a quarter was going to hit between the eyes and big cap and yada, yada, yada. And something, a wheel fell off somewhere after the San Antonio. Baffert got very circumspect when talking about this horse or we're committing to spots. It's bullish that he's coming, bringing him back in a grade one. I like that. The distance may be a tad shorter than what he's best at. I just don't want him at a short price off the layoff given past fitness issues. The horse I do like is Noble Bird. I thought he ran very big in the Ali Sheba.
Should've
I mean,
won.
That was a quintessential classic three wide around the racetrack trip. And yes, it looked like he hung late against Protonico.
I think Protonico won the race.
And
Protonico's a good horse, you know.
I agree with you both. And this horse did win two nose decisions last time, so it's not like he's a hanging rat.
Yeah, I don't think he's a hanger.
So, I mean, a 103 with that much ground loss works for me and to me makes him the horse if Lee doesn't fire. But I got to say, Mike, I'm with you on Paganel.
Right.
I mean, this horse, if I were playing the contest and Noble Bird was 7-1 and Paganel was 18-1, I'm playing Paganel.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, I think you guys make a good case. I don't really see it, but it doesn't mean you guys can't be right and I can be wrong. The other one I just want to mention, we're running out of time here, but the other one I want to mention, who might be my bet in the race as sort of an underneath type horse, especially in third for bottom up tri keys and that kind of thing, is Majestic Harbor. Who once, you know, who has a race, you know, he's run some races that would make you think he could hit the board in here. Mm-hmm. Done the best work at Churchill Downs, could get the setup here if I'm right about the pace and it's not Paganel by himself and Lee's aggressive and Commissioner's ridden aggressively. If it could set up for a closer and Opportunity isn't a horse anymore, which is also a distinct possibility, I think this horse could surprise and sneak into the number at a big price.
Here's my question for you.
Hit me.
It seems like he's improved because he was one that was he was treading water earlier this year and last year after his big win in the Gold Cup. Okay, and I don't know if it was the switch to Keeneland, but it seems to me like the blinkers helped. So why do they take them off? Obviously, that last race, he didn't want to go long on the turf. You can excuse that one.
I guess he was just keen there, just from the running line. The blinkers must have lit him up.
Yeah, but so that's my concern there, is if the blinkers helped and made him a good horse again.
That's a valid question.
Yeah. No, it's a good question, though. I would never, ever get off a 20-1 shot based on
you know, Matt and I were having this conversation yesterday because I think Matt was trying to make a similar case, and that was I almost wanted to land on him because Matt actually was disagreeing with me in the sense that he was kind of on your side, Pete, that he saw Paganel getting a lot of early pace pressure, and he thought it set up really well for a horse to come off the pace like Majestic Harbor.
Now, just curious if you could relay to the listeners and viewers Matt's thoughts about his old pal opportunity?
You know, he wasn't on him, and I don't know if it was more just the price he's likely to be, or if it was what Eric had noted, just kind of some concerns about whether he was in the top shape. But I think that's partly why he was trying to make a case for Majestic Harbor, because if he believed that there was going to be a contested
that's
early pace,
it
would set up well for a horse like Opportunity.
Well, we'll see. This is great. I enjoyed all the back and forth, guys. Eric, great having you here. Super fun to get to chop this stuff up and talk about it. There you have it. That's the four public handicapper races. We'll be watching and playing. Hopefully you folks at home will be as well. If you want to hit us up on Twitter, let's give those Twitter handles quickly. Famously, Mike Hogan.
At DRF Formulator.
At DRF Wing.
And I'm at Looms Boldly. We're going to be back on the podcast next week. We haven't quite figured out which day it's going to be. Sorry,
probably
folks.
Probably Wednesday.
People are giving us a hard time about not having a schedule. And they're right, and we'll get there. It'll be Tuesday or Wednesday, and then we'll be back with another one Friday where we go over these public handicapper races again. Until the next time, for Matt Bernier, for Mike Hogan, for Eric Wing, I'm Peter Thomas Fornatale. This is the DRF Players Podcast, and may you win all your photos.